up now, get up out of bed. Wash your face, brush your teeth, comb your sleepy head. Here's your clothes and your shoes. Hear the words I said. Get up now, get up and make.
Welcome to Because I Said So. 3 out of 4 children go through it. What is it? Bullying. And we are talking to Dr. Susan Swearer, professor of school psychology and the co-director of the Bullying Research Network today. We have our own stories to share, reactions to her advice, why don't kids tell, the profile of children who become the victim and the bully, what fuels bullying. So we have a very packed show on bullying today.
Don't leave a rope. Would you just play fair, be polite, make a friend, don't forget to share, work it out, wait your turn, never take a dare.
Bullying. It's a term that's thrown around a lot today. And we had the opportunity to speak with Dr. Susan Swearer, professor of school psychology and co-director of the Bullying Research Network. Dr. Swearer was in Easton recently. She presented a discussion called How to Manage Difficult Situations and Encourage Positive Behavior. Dr. Swearer actually presented to the White House, too, in their most recent White House Bullying Prevention Conference. And she offers insight on who's bullied, why they're bullied, and what parents can do to help out. And we were very actually happy and privileged that Chris got to sit down with Dr. Susan Swearer and do the interview on bullying.
Dr. Susan Swearer is a professor of school psychology and the co-director of the Bullying Research Network based out of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Thank you, Dr. Swearer, for joining us. Let's get right to the questions. How extensive or serious a problem do you think bullying is in schools today?
Well, when you look at the research, about 3 out of 4 kids report that they've been bullied or experienced some form of bullying, either as a bully victim, or a bystander at some point during their school careers. So I wouldn't say it's a problem that every child experiences, but it's certainly a problem that a number of children experience at some point.
Well, are some children more likely to be bullied than others? And is there a type of child who's more likely to be a bully?
You know, people have spent a lot of time researching that question, you know, looking at, is there a profile of a child who is doing the bullying, or is there a profile of a child who is a victim? And, you know, essentially there are, you know, they're not, you know, a list of 6 characteristics that we can say, oh, that child is going to bully or that child is going to be bullied. What we do know is that when there's a culture of intolerance and, you know, lack of respect for differences, that kids who stand out, you know, might be more likely to be targeted. But the standing out and being different really varies across communities. And then in terms of the kid who might be more likely to bully others, again, there is no, you know, kind of set profile for those kids. Some kids who bully others might have some mental health issues. Some kids may come from homes where their parents are aggressive. Some kids may come from homes where there's not a lot of supervision. Or they may, you know, have a peer group where kids bully to, you know, gain popularity and social status, which we know happens as well. So there's just a variety of factors that contribute to, you know, involvement in bullying. And, you know, frankly, if there were, you know, the 5 characteristics that we could pick, you know, or the profile, then we would, you know, maybe have some better chances in terms of prevention. But the fact is, it's just really complicated.
Why don't children talk about bullying? Why don't they usually tell when they're being bullied?
You know, I think, again, there are a variety of reasons. One is children who are being bullied feel a sense of shame and they're embarrassed. Another reason is we really have a culture that has been established in a lot of our schools where we tell kids not to tattle. And that's some of the work that I try to do when I'm working with schools, is to say, you know, we want to create a culture of telling. We want to create a culture where kids feel that they can communicate openly with teachers and with parents about things that are bothering them. You know, we don't want to have a culture where we communicate to kids, you know, you don't talk to adults or you can't talk to adults. And so I think that's a big part of the solution toward bullying, is creating a culture where kids and adults talk openly about these issues.
Okay, so if I'm a parent or if I'm a teacher and I've got a child, boy or girl, and I suspect that they're being bullied, what should I do? What can I do to protect the child?
Mm-hmm. I think first and foremost, it's really important to communicate to that child that I'm somebody that you can come and talk to, you know, regardless of what the issue is, you know, so that, you know, you present yourself as an open, caring adult. I mean, a lot of times we say to kids, you know, who are the trusted adults that you can go and talk to in your school? And so, you know, every school should have, you know, identified, you know, adults that kids feel that these are the people that I can talk with, and, you know, I know that they're going to, you know, help me, or, you know, at least help me problem solve what's happening to me. So it's just extremely important that, you know, adults communicate, you know, I want to talk to you and to hear what you have to say, versus, you know, saying, you know, go talk to somebody else, or looking busy or things like that. So really being open and available for kids to talk to them.
You've been conducting research on a program called Target Bullying that looks at bullying and victimization in middle-age school youth. And you found that there are certain psychological and social conditions that fuel bullying. What are they, and what's the best intervention to stop the cycle?
That's a great question. We've been conducting research on the kids who are doing the bullying behaviors for the past, you know, 5 years to try to determine, you know, what are factors that contribute to the bullying behaviors. And so part of my answer, you know, to your earlier question was that it's just really varied, that there really is no set profile, if you will. Some of these youth, so then part of what our research actually really advocates is trying to then understand these youth from an individual basis, you know, what is, you know, creating or causing this, you know, boy or girl to engage in mean behaviors. And so for some of these kids, you know, we've found that they, you know, their home life is pretty problematic. They don't have a lot of support, but that's not for everybody. For some of these kids, we have found that they have high levels of social anxiety. For some of these kids, they really struggle with feelings of depression. And so then, you know, by acting out or being, you know, mean toward other people, you know, they kind of, you know, in an odd way, you know, kind of feel better about themselves. Some of these kids, you know, have had older siblings who have bullied them at home. And then in turn, they go to school and they end up bullying other kids. And so what we've really discovered is that there's just a complex, you know, variety of psychological and social factors that combine to, you know, kind of in the end result of having a student who might be more likely to bully others. And so then our hope is that when we can really kind of unpack and unearth some of these factors, that then we create a very extensive list of recommendations for the family and for the school and for the child, him or herself, in terms of how to engage in more positive pro-social behaviors and turn some of these negative behaviors around.
Well, finally, on our show, we talk a lot about being a parent and having Facebook. Mm-hmm. How is the growth of social media like Facebook? Well, obviously, it's affecting bullying, but how is it affecting bullying?
You know, I think we, you know, individuals who study bullying and every one of us who has kids or people who have kids really see that social media and technology have influenced bullying, and that this is now a behavior that can happen 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A behavior that used to be just face-to-face, you know, now can happen constantly. And so as a parent, I think it's really important to have very open conversations, you know, with our kids about the use of technology, the use of computers, the use of cell phones. It's very important that parents, you know, have again, you know, kind of back to this idea of open communication. You know, open communication with their kids about social media, about the use of technology, and, you know, not only, you know, being friends with their kids on Facebook, but, you know, being able to log in as their kids on Facebook is important. And really, the conversation I have with our kids is, you know, this is part of my job as a parent in terms of, you know, making sure that, you know, you're safe in this digital world. And so I always have an analogy, you know, I'm not sure any parent would let their, you know, 12-year-old child walk down a dark alley in a major city at night unsupervised, just like, you know, as parents, we really shouldn't let our kids be unsupervised in the digital world. And it's just a different conversation that we, you know, need to have with our children about their online behavior, and we're really teaching them and shaping some of these online interactions. So that's a different conversation than I know, obviously, my parents never had to have with me.
Do you actually log in as your child?
I do log in as my child. So actually, but I, you know, she actually doesn't use Facebook all that much, so we're lucky as parents that she's not obsessed with Facebook. But the deal was she wasn't allowed to open a Facebook account until she was 13.
Which is the rules.
Which is the rule. So, of course, all of her friends at age 11, you know, opened their accounts. And, you know, she wasn't overly, you know, upset about it, but we just explained that's the rule and that's the way it is. And so then when she was 13, it actually lost its appeal. And so she said, I said, you know, if you want to open a Facebook account, I can help you. And she's like, I'm actually not that interested in it. So I thought that was kind of interesting from a parental perspective. But then she ended up opening a Facebook account. And the deal was that I know her login name and her password. But at this point, she's, I think, forgotten that I can log in as her. And so maybe every 3 months I'll log in as her and just check it out. Now, again, we're lucky in that she doesn't use Facebook that much. But it's important to kind of monitor, you know, who's sending your child friend request.
Yeah.
You really don't know. And when I log in as me and I look at her page, it's very different than when I log in as her, because obviously all of her friends who I'm not friends with, they, you know, her feed looks different than when I'm logged in as her. So I now actually recommend to parents, one, if you have this conversation with your kids when they're younger, then it's just their normal. You know, they don't think, oh, my mom or dad is invading my privacy. And then over time, they'll actually forget that you know how to log in as them. And so, again, I think it's just important to have some watchful eye over what your, you know, children are posting or not posting, or honestly, who's requesting to be their friend, because you really have no control, you know, you don't have any, you know, control or awareness of that.
Yeah. It almost seems like it's always easier to tighten up than it is to ratchet down. And I could see, you know, if I've had a child who's had, you know, 8 years of using Facebook and being wildly responsible with it, then I could almost see like, okay, fine, now you're on your own.
Right.
But, you know.
Well, and also if you're a parent, say, of a 16-year-old and your, you know, 16-year-old is getting into, you know, trouble or having issues with cyberbullying, if you try to clamp down on your 16-year-old, that's going to be a lot harder than if you had this conversation, you know, when they were 11 or 12.
I've been speaking with Dr. Susan Swear, co-author of the recently published book, Bullying Prevention and Intervention, Realistic Strategies for Schools. Thank you, Dr. Swear, for talking to us. The price of gas got you down? Spend your Saturday afternoons traveling across the country from New York's Finger Lakes to Savannah, Georgia to the Napa Valley, courtesy of America's Music Festivals. Your host, Aurelie Shaham, is your tour guide to some of the best classical music festivals in the country, and you won't have to top off the tank. That's America's Music Festivals every Saturday afternoon at 4 p.m. starting May 12th on WSCL 89.5 FM.
Prior to this segment of the show, you heard Dr. Susan Swearer, the professor of school psychology and co-director of the Bullying Research Network, talking with Chris, our producer, about bullying and the signs, what to look for, who's more prone to be bullied, who's more likely to be a bully. And Chris, you did that interview, and you actually have your own bullying story to share.
Yeah, you know, I never was beat up or anything, but I grew up in a pretty rural town where the football team and the basketball team were the stars of the school and could do no wrong. And boys at the time who, this is late 80s, boys who were on the swim team and in band got picked on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were considered, I don't know, this weird thing where you're considered effeminate for being in the band, which I could never figure out, but that's how it was. And I got a lot of guff for it, and, you know, again, never was beat up, but picked on a lot, and it hurt. It hurt a lot.
That's what I was going to ask you. How did it affect you at that age?
You know, I was in 10th grade, and, you know, it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Were your friends band members as well, and so they could relate to what you were saying, or did you have a diverse group of friends?
Yeah. I mean, in my class, my friends, we all were pretty much in the same situation, so we all felt kind of the same way.
Yeah.
You know, I had a bunch of not boyfriends, but friends who were boys who would feel the same sort of way. Like, oh, God, why do they always have to, you know.
Pick on us.
Yeah, you band geeks all the time, or other words, you know. So it's hard. It really does make you, it makes you very sad.
And angry?
And angry.
Yeah. But you have a son now yourself, so...
Yep.
I would think that you would be a little more in touch with maybe the possibility of that happening to him, or, you know,
oh, yeah,
you,
yeah.
You'll know what to do.
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing. It's easy to say, you know what to do, but you're not with your child when they're in school, when it's happening, and they may not be sharing it with you. And that's always the hard part, is when you know, there's some statistic here, 160,000 children miss school every day out of fear of being bullied. I mean, so, you know, we all, I think, have seen our kids act like they don't want to go to school for whatever reason. They got a tummy ache, whatever it is, because there's a test. But, you know, if your child is continuously acting like they don't want to go to school, you know, you got to get to the bottom of that. You know,
certainly.
It certainly could be a bullying situation. And hopefully, you know, you're going to encourage your kids to talk to you about it.
Well, I have my own bullying story with my 8-year-old. I went to pick him up from school, and there was a substitute teacher that day. And it just so happened that my husband was with me in the car. And we pick him up in the pickup line, and the substitute runs out to the car, and I roll the window down, and she says, "I just want you to be aware that there was a case of bullying in the classroom today, and your son was involved." And then she walks away from the car. I'm like, wait a minute here. I said to my husband, Stephen, pull up. I'm getting out of the car. I ran after her and said, you can't just say that and then walk away. Talk to me. What happened? Little did I know, this was her very first day of being a substitute teacher in the second grade. So it was a rough day for her, I think. But the three boys were involved. Stephen was one of them. And she, I don't think, was paying attention to everything that was going on, because that's, you know, my first question was, how did it escalate to that? Because it got physical. And I just think that she was maybe just so busy and overwhelmed and stressed that she didn't really see what took place. So when we got home, my husband and I sat Stephen down and we grilled him. We said, tell us exactly what happened. Then one of the other boys, who's his friend who was involved, we called his mom. And I said, you know, did Zach get off the bus yet? And we asked her. We said, you need to get the story from him, and then let's compare stories. He told the exact same story. So we knew he wasn't lying, you know, to cover anything up. And they both had the same stories. And then it was a conversation or a phone call to the principal, which I didn't get the call returned for a while because she had no idea what was going on, but had to get the bottom of it and hear all stories. And she sat down with all the boys the next day and talked to them. Now, in their eyes, bullying has a definition. It's not being picked on one day. It's over and over. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a pattern. And she's like, she may have said bullying, but this was not a case of bullying. Well, okay.
Well, and I do think it's interesting that we've made that social shift now from, you know, when Chris was in high school, when I was in junior high and picked on, you know, it was kids will be kids. Mm-hmm. And now we've really kind of brought it to the forefront and said, no, this is a social issue that we need to deal with.
Well, I think one of the things that's changed, and I'm not sure whether it's, you know, we have school shootings now. And so we look at the genesis of why a kid takes a gun into a school, and oftentimes those kids have been bullied. They've been ostracized. They've been set apart, and they are so angry about it. They come in. So we go back to, well, how do we prevent that kid from getting to that point? So, you know, like a lot of things in life, you know, we probably in some cases overreact, and in others maybe not so much. But I mean, I know in our county school system, we have a strict no tolerance bullying policy. It was in place, or just it going in place, when my coworker's daughter was going through middle school and unfortunately had a horrible situation with another girl in a bullying situation. And it got so bad that she had to be there after school to pick up her daughter every day by 3:01 or whatever the time was. If she was a minute or two late, you know, that girl was a sitting duck sitting outside that school. I mean, that's how her mother felt about it. Like, I cannot be late to pick her up, or she will be attacked by this girl and her sort of gang of friends. And it really, really got bad and escalated. And ultimately, it did end up in a physical altercation between these two girls. And the mother was very frustrated because she had worked for months to try to avoid that situation from happening, including trying to get her daughter removed from a class. And
yeah, but that's the thing. Do you want your daughter to live in fear like that? I think that being a little more proactive, and I'm not saying, you know, I don't know what I would do in that situation.
That's
but
just it. It's hard to say what you would do in that situation.
The one thing that I think is wildly different is I don't know how, you know, where picked on goes to being bullying, but when I was being picked on in middle school and high school, you had places to go where you wouldn't get picked on at home, or, you know, while I was on the swim team guys were all great and we didn't pick on each other. It was fine. I couldn't imagine what it would have been like to go home and turn on a computer in 1990 and have the same group of people who were picking on you at school bothering you at home.
Online.
You know, that's got to be wildly different, and I can't even imagine what it's like for kids to go through that.
Well, yeah, then it never stops.
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't get a break.
Absolutely. I know my daughter had an incident this school year, so she's in second grade, and she didn't tell me about it when it first happened, but in the lunchroom, there were some girls sitting in an opposite table, so not in her classroom. And she said that they were constantly glaring, giving bad looks, you know, that kind of thing, calling names to her and a couple of the other girls in her class. And, you know, to me, that's kids being kids, girls being girls, whatever. But then she told me she went into the bathroom and those girls were in the bathroom. And while she was in one of the stalls, they tried to climb under the bathroom stall. And again, she didn't tell me when it first happened. And I said, well, what did you do? And she said, well, the ladies in the cafeteria wouldn't really listen to it. They said we were tattling, but her classroom teacher did listen. And her classroom teacher made it a point to come into the cafeteria the next day and to see who the girls were, and made it very clear to that classroom teacher and to those girls that she would not tolerate it. So she put an end to it right away. I didn't have a conversation with her about it. I didn't have to. She ended it.
I do think it was an interesting point that our expert made about this tattling culture that we do try to tell kids, you know, don't be a tattletale, you know, work it out yourself. But we, you know, that does fly in the face of when you are feeling, you know, that there's a situation beyond your control, you have to have someone you can go to trust. And I know that the schools are working on these issues, and I know that they're incredibly challenging. But, you know, it's...
Well, I think that's key, is that, you know, I don't think that the adults always have all the answers, obviously. They might not be able to solve the problem right there, but for the kids that are feeling bullied, they, like Chris said, they have to know that they have somebody they can talk to. Mm-hmm. They have a place to go so that somebody is listening to them, somebody believes them, you know, somebody feels like, look, we are trying to help you in this situation.
And I think we have to go all the way back to kindergarten, first grade. I mean, if this was second grade when it happened to your daughter, my daughter's in first grade, and you can already see the cliques and the special clubs and mm-hmm. the you're not invited. We have to teach tolerance. We absolutely have to teach tolerance.
At a young age,
that different is good. Different isn't bad. And I think if we get that message out before different becomes, a target of a bully.
Mm-hmm. I've always tried to teach my children, you know, when a situation like this comes up, like, how would you feel? How would you feel if you were in their shoes? You know, it goes back to when we had Grace Foxwell Murdoch in, you know, don't do anything that's going to make somebody else feel bad. And that's such a simple little rule to try and live by. But, you know, think about if you are the odd person out from that group of kids and, you know, go that extra mile to make them feel included. I just think we need to teach our kids how to be empathetic and how to reach across and try to, you know, and try to bridge those gaps with these kids.
No, I agree. I think you're very right, Kathy. You've been listening to Because I Said So, and the topic of bullying, very prevalent. We're going to share information and links on our website, becauseisaidsoradio.com. So please go there for more information. And the favorite part of our show, the Mother of the Month stories that we're asking you to share as well on our Facebook page, and then ask your friends to like them on the page so you can be the winner of a free massage. It's not hard to do, and we all have the stories out there, and we really don't get bored of sharing our stories because we do it every week. Kim, I think you had mentioned that you have a Mother of the Month story.
I do. This was a couple of weeks ago. I was sitting with my daughter. She had asked me to play, and I don't know how you guys all feel about that, but she wanted me to play Barbies with her. And, you know, maybe this is more of just telling, you know, my sad story that I don't like to play with my kids, but she asked me to play, and literally I could only stand it for 5 minutes. That sitting down playing Barbies just really, it does something to my brain. So I sat there and I'm like, what else can I do? I got up and I cleaned the bathroom. I told my daughter, I said, Kennedy, I'm sorry, but mommy has to go and clean the bathroom right now.
Holy cow.
And do you know the
That's
sad thing is?
That's preferable than playing Barbies?
Well, you know what? That brings up an interesting topic, though, because really, for the first couple of years of my children's life, like if I saw another Candyland board, I was going to hang myself. So I didn't love it. I mean, I did it because I felt it was my motherly duty, but
I totally 100% agree with you. And I think
like
I actually played with Stephen, my firstborn, too much because I thought that's what I was supposed to do. And then as he grew a little bit older, he didn't know how to play with other kids for a little while there because he always played with me. And it maybe wasn't the right thing to do.
Yeah. I think the key here is to find something that you enjoy and that your daughter enjoys too. Like, and even if you can throw a chore in there, it's great.
Well,
I'd like to do this thing with my daughter where we pair up socks and we make it a competition. So we dump all the socks in the middle of the bed and then we go and we race them together and it makes it fun and the socks get paired up because really, who hates that?
Now, my Mother
of
the Month
that?
Story, though, does have something to do with chores, and I did share it on our Facebook page a couple weeks ago, but it was the, you know, my most hated chore of emptying the dishwasher. Hate it, have always hated it. And I realized a couple weeks ago that Ben was now old enough to empty the dishwasher.
Mm-hmm.
I was
yeah.
ecstatic. Mm-hmm. I was beside myself introducing him to his new chore that's going to teach him responsibility.
Every time? Does he have to do it? Or
as much as I possibly can, that child will empty the dishwasher.
Hmm.
Yes. But I was very surprised at my elation.
What?
To be able to hand
I could
off.
Now pawn this off.
And
in the name of responsibility.
In the beginning of it, he's like really cool with it.
Oh, he's so excited. He's so excited.
It might get old, though.
It will get old.
That's fine with me?
Everything gets old, yeah.
That just reminded me of my story, and that was a paper that came home from school, and it had him, Nicholas, my five-year-old, talking about what he likes to do at home or something. There was a question there. I like to mop the floor, because the other day, it just needed mopped, and he wanted to he wanted to do something with me, like play or do something. And I'm like, you know what? I really need to mop the floor. Do you want to help mommy mop the floor? Of course he did.
Right. Well, at least he didn't write, my mommy makes me mop the floor.
No, but then I saw the homework, the paper, though, and I was like, ooh, that doesn't look too good, does it?
Oh, please.
Oh, sure.
What are you worried about?
Fantastic.
My daughter's Mother's Day paper that she made for me last year said, you know, what does your mom do? She wrote, my mom snorts, meaning when I laugh. But that's hanging on my refrigerator still.
Nice.
Did you get a call?
That's what you're...
No, I didn't get a call.
Smart. What?
Oh.
Well, no, I think her teacher knew me a little bit, so she knew better than that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. No, but hey, well, we're gonna find out soon. We'll get some Mother's Day papers coming home, something about what our kids think of us.
Mm.
It happens every year.
Hopefully they'll be good. I'm sure she meant that in a funny way. She probably enjoys your snorts.
Oh, she did. I thought it was hysterical.
Yeah.
That's why it's still on my refrigerator.
It's very sweet.
I think last year Ben had to write a biography of me. And so he had, you know, the series of questions like, when were you born and where were you born and who are your parents? And I remember one of the teachers saying to me, you know, it's so nice that your favorite song is Joy to the World, because I love Christmas songs, too. And I'm like, oh, no, the Three Dog Night Joy to the World. Didn't get included.
That's funny. It's cute.
So don't forget, folks, please. Did you have a story, Kathy? I know.
No, I'll skip this time.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh.
We have too many to tell. Yes.
Well, we want you to go out on our Facebook page and share your Mother of the Month stories. And then ask your friends to like them so you can win the massage, because every mom deserves a massage. And we know that you have the stories to share, whether you want to or not. We are getting a kick out of the ones that people are sharing.
Yeah, so go to our Facebook page and read the others and like which ones you like the best, please.
And you don't have to feel bad about it, because when you do read someone else's, it just makes you feel all good.
There's a couple good ones on there, too, I have to say. Yeah.
So join us on our Facebook page. You're listening to Because I Said So.
You've been listening to Because I Said So, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. For more information, including podcasts of this episode, visit us online at becauseisaidsoradio.com. Thanks to Anita Renfro for allowing us to use her song Momisms as our theme song. And be sure to like us on Facebook. Look for the lady with the red hot lips.
I said so. I'm the mom. The mom. The mom. The mom. The mom.